When I saw Alicia at the counter and she couldn't tell me anything about where Finn was or when he was coming back, I decided that I wasn't going to give her the book to return to him. I also decided that someone needed to see if they could figure out where Finn was.
So you came back at night and looked for him at the store?
I thought, I said to Jesse, that we were coming here to find out where Gabriel is and how to rescue him. And I choose to ask questions of you first so that I may decide how much I want to tell you, Alicia said. That implied heavily that if I chose not to answer her questions, she'd tell us nothing. If she knew anything. I looked at Z, who shrugged and lifted his hands an inch off his lap. He had no influence with her. My other option was to wait for the Fairy Queen's call.
All right, I told Jesse.
You already know that Sam and I went to check out the bookstore at night to find out if something happened to Finn. We found that his store had been trashed by a water fae and two forest fae of some sort.
There was a glamour in the store, said Alicia. A strong glamour that I couldn't penetrate, though I knew it was there. I was so afraid that my grandson's body was lying next to me, and I could not sense it.
There's a cost for magic, said Z, folding his age-spotted hands over his little pot belly. Glamour has less than most now, but there is still a cost for sight and sound, a cost for physical dimensions. There are few fae with good noses, so less effort is spent there and more on the other senses. Magic works,
he glanced my way. Oddly is what I usually say, I told him.
Oddly on Mercedes. Some works fine, some not so well, but she has a keen nose and that allows her to penetrate glamours. I've seen her break through a glamour set by a Grey Lord. The one we are after is no Grey Lord.
Finn bled on that floor, Jesse, I said. I don't have much hope that he survived his encounter, but we didn't find his body. We went down to the basement, which was also trashed, and while we were down there, one of the fae who had destroyed the store turned up on the stairs.
That's the one who was dead in the basement, Alicia said in an odd tone. The one someone started to eat.
Sam's not been himself lately, I told Jesse. The fae knocked me cold. And when I woke up, Sam had killed him and...
Sam, the fae said softly, and her hands clenched on her lap.
You have friends who are werewolves, Z tells me.
This Sam is a werewolf?
Sam is a werewolf and my friend, I told her. Maybe my tone was a little sharp, but I was getting tired of people attacking Samuel. Who saved my life by killing the not-so-jolly green giant... I'm okay with it if he helped himself to a little snack. If it squicked my thou shalt not be a cannibal button, that was a button my mother gave me, not the werewolves. He hadn't violated any werewolf taboos. Eating your prey is better than leaving the bodies lying around.
Alicia didn't seem to be too upset about my snapping at her, though.
Samuel Cornick, she said, her eyes catching mine. Samuel Maroxon, Samuel Branson, Samuel White Wolf, Samuel Swiftfoot, Samuel Deathbringer, Samuel Avenger.
I couldn't remember what color her eyes had been in the bookstore, but I knew it hadn't been green. Not hazel, not a human color at all, but a brilliant grass green that darkened to blue and brightened.
That would be me, said Samuel, standing in the doorway.
He was wearing a gray sweatshirt and had managed to find a pair of jeans that were only a little baggy.
Hello, Harry. It's been a few centuries.
His voice was soft.
I didn't know you had a talent for true naming.
She looked at him, and I saw the pupils of her eyes widen past her changeable irises until her eyes were as black as a starless night. And then her glamour went all funky. I've seen Fae drop their glamour before. Sometimes it's cool, with colors sliding and mixing. Sometimes it's like when I shapeshift, just blink, and the man in front of you suddenly has antennae and 6-inch-long hair growing from his hands. But this was different. It reminded me of an electrical appliance shorting out, complete with quiet fizzling noises. A patch of skin appeared on her arm that had been covered by the sweater she wore, and on the patch of skin was a little scar. Then there was a sound, and the sweater reappeared, and there was a 6-inch by 4-inch section of skin revealed on her thigh. But most of that space was taken up by a horrendous scar that looked deep and stiff, a wound that healed badly enough that it probably interfered with her ability to use her leg. After an instant, it disappeared, and three scarred areas appeared on her face, hand, and neck. Her skin tone around the scars was darker than the one she wore to hide from the world. The color was nothing outlandish, a few shades darker than mine or lighter than Daryl's, but to my eyes the texture was softer than human skin. It appeared as if the old wounds were presenting themselves to us, or rather to Samuel, because she never took her attention off him. Jessie reached out and grabbed my knee, but her face didn't change as the Fae woman slowly stood up. She began to breathe hard as she took several steps back, sliding her chair behind her until it bumped into the shelving in back of her, and she couldn't retreat anymore. Her mouth opened, and she began panting, and I realized what I was seeing was a full-blown panic attack done Fae style. Z had said her panic attacks were dangerous.
Ariana, Samuel said in a voice like Medea's gentlest purr.
He didn't move from the door, giving her space.
Ari, your father is dead, and so are his beasts. I promise you are safe.
Don't move, Z told Jessie and me in a low voice, his eyes on the Fae woman.
This could go very badly. Told you not to bring any of the wolves.
I brought myself, old man, said Samuel. And I told Ariana that if she ever needed me, I would come. It was a promise and a threat, though I didn't mean it that way at the time.
Alicia Brewster, whom Samuel had apparently known as Ariana, hummed three notes and started to talk.
A long time passed in a land far from this one, said Alicia in a storyteller's voice. There was a Fae daughter who could work magic in silver, and so she was named. In a time where Fae were dying from cold iron, their magics fading as the one god's ignorant followers built their churches in our places of power, the metals loved her touch, her magic flourished, and her father grew envious.
He was a nasty piece of work, said Samuel,
his eyes on the woman's wrinkled face that sometimes wore scars on her cheek or at the corner of her eye.
Mercy would call him a real rat bastard. He was a forest lord whose greatest magic was to command beasts. When the last of the giants, who were beasts controlled by his magic, died, it left him a forest lord with no great power, and he resented it as Ariana's power grew, when the Fae lost their ability to imprint their magic on things, like your walking staff, Mercy. She could still manage it. People found out.
A great lord of the Fae came, continued Ariana.
She didn't seem to be listening to Samuel, but she waited for him to quit speaking before she started.
He required that she build an abomination, an artifact that would consume the Fae magic of his enemies and give it back to him. She refused, but her father accepted and sealed the bargain in blood.
She stopped talking, and after a moment Samuel picked up the story.
He beat her, and she still refused. His was a magic sort of like the Fairy Queen's, in that he could influence others. It might have been more useful, but he could only influence beasts.
So he turned her into a beast.
Ariana's voice echoed, even though my office was full enough that a gunshot shouldn't echo, and it was eerie enough that Jessie scooted nearer to me. Ariana wasn't looking at Samuel anymore, but I couldn't tell where she was looking instead. I don't think it was a happy place.
In those days, the Fae's magic was still strong enough that it was harder to kill them unless you had iron or steel, said Samuel.
He didn't seem worried about Ariana, but Z was. Z had gradually moved off his chair until he was crouched between Jessie and the scarred Fae woman.
He used his powers to torture her, Samuel said. He had a pair of hounds who were Fae hounds. Their howls would drop a stag in its path, and their gaze could scare a man to death. He set them at her every morning for an hour, knowing that as long as he went not one moment more than an hour, she could not die, because that was part of these fear hounds' magic.
She broke, Ariana said hoarsely. She broke and followed his will as faithfully as his hounds. She knew nothing but his commands, and she built as he desired, forged it of silver and magic and her blood.
You didn't break, said Samuel confidently. You fought him every day.
Ariana's voice changed, and she snapped, "She couldn't fight him."
"You fought him," Samuel said again. "You fought. And he called his hounds until his magic failed him because he used it one time too often. I had this story from someone who was there, Ariana. You fought him and stopped, leaving the artifact incomplete."
"It is my story," she growled, and she turned those black eyes on Samuel. "She failed. She built it."
"Truth belongs to no one," Samuel told her. "Ariana's father visited a witch because his magic was insufficient to work his will."
There was something in his voice that made me think that he knew and hated that witch.
"He paid the price she demanded for a spell that combined witchcraft with his magic."
"His right hand," said Ariana. Samuel waited for her, but she just stared at him.
"I think he wanted to call his hounds," Samuel said, "but they had strayed too far for him to influence. He got something quite different."
"Werewolves," said Ariana. Then she turned her back to us, hunching her shoulders. I saw that there were scars on her back, too.
"We attacked because we had to," Samuel said gently. "But my father was stronger than we were and resisted. He killed her father. We stopped, but she was so badly hurt. A human would have died or been reborn as one of us. She only suffered."
"You doctored her," I said. "You helped her heal. You saved her." Ariana crumpled, and Samuel leaped over all of us and caught her before she hit the floor. Her body was limp, her eyes closed, and the scars were hidden safely behind her glamour again.
"Did I?" Samuel asked, looking down at her with his heart in his eyes. "The scar on the top of her shoulder was one I gave her."
"Hot damn," I thought, watching him. "Hot damn, Charles. I found something for Samuel to live for." Samuel had been upstairs with Adam when the Fairy Queen called to tell us what she was looking for. Silverborn. The mention of the artifact alone was enough to make it impossible for him to yield to his wolf. But it had been when Zee called me and Ariana spoke that he'd come back to us. "You saved her," I told him. "And you loved her."
"She didn't know, did she?"
said Jessie, sounding as caught up in the story as Ariana had been.
"You doctored her up, and she fell for you, and you couldn't tell her what you were. That's really romantic, Doc."
"And tragic," said Zee sourly.
"How do you know it's tragic?" sputtered Jessie.
The old face scowled and gestured toward Samuel.
"I'm not seeing a happy ever after ending here, are you?"
Samuel pulled the Fey woman against him. It looked odd, a young man holding a woman who could have been his grandmother indeed. But Fey don't age. They fade. Her grandmotherly appearance was a glamour. The scars were real. But I saw his face and knew that he only cared about the pain they represented. "Endings are relative," I said, and Samuel jerked his head up. "I mean, as long as no one is dead, they get the chance to rewrite their endings, don't you think? Take it from me, Samuel. A little time can heal some awfully big wounds."
"Did she look healed to you?" he said,
and his eyes were the color of winter ice.
"We're all alive," said Zee dryly, "and she didn't disappear on us, which she still has the magic to do. I'd say you have a chance."
Chapter 13. Samuel started to say something to Zee when the woman he held opened her eyes, which were green again. She gave us all a bewildered look, as if she could not imagine how she'd gotten where she was. I knew exactly how she felt. As soon as he saw that she was awake, Samuel set her down with careful haste.
"I'm sorry, Ari. You were falling. I wouldn't have touched..."
I had never in my life seen anything like it. Samuel, the son of a Welsh bard who shared his father's gift for words, stammering like an infatuated teenager. She grabbed Samuel's sweatshirt and looked up at him in utter astonishment.
"Samuel?"
He stepped away from her, but stopped short of pulling the shirt from her grasp.
"I can't give you space unless you let me go," he told her.
"Samuel?" she said. And though it hadn't caught my notice before,
I realized that her voice had changed sometime in the middle of her panic attack and sounded way too young for the late middle-aged face she wore. It was also lightly accented, some combination of British and Welsh or a related language.
I thought I looked, but I never could find you. You just disappeared and left me nothing. Not a shirt or a name.
He pulled away again, and this time she let him go. Free, he retreated to the damaged door that separated my office from the garage.
I'm a werewolf.
Ariana nodded and took two steps forward.
I did notice that when you killed the hounds who had come for me.
There was a hint of humor in her voice. Good, I thought. Any woman I'd allow to have Samuel would have to have a sense of humor.
The fangs gave it away, or maybe the tail. You saved me again, and then you left, and all I knew was your first name.
I scared you, he said starkly.
She gave him a half-smile, but clenched her hands.
Well, yes, but it seems I scared you worse because you ran away for a very, very long time, Samuel.
He looked away from her gaze. The most dominant werewolf in the Tri-Cities, and he couldn't meet her gaze. Didn't he see that even if he scared her, she still wanted him? She tried to take another step toward him and stopped. I could smell her terror, sharp and sour. She backed away from him with a little sigh.
It is very good to see you again, Samuel, she said. Because of you I am whole, and here all these centuries after my father would have destroyed me. Instead, his body long ago fed his beasts in the trees of his forests.
Samuel bowed his head, and to the floor he said,
I'm glad you are well, and apologize for causing your panic attack today. I should have stayed out.
Yes, panic attacks. They can be pretty...
She looked at Z, who was back in his chair, looking as relaxed as if he'd spent the last 10 minutes watching a very boring soap opera.
Did I hurt anyone, Seabolt?
No, he said, folding his arms. Just true-named our wolf and told Mercedes and Jessie the story of the Silver Bone.
She looked at me, then at Jessie, maybe to see how frightened we were. Whatever she saw reassured her, because she gave a shy smile.
Oh, that's good. Good.
Her shoulders relaxed, and she turned her attention back to Samuel.
I don't have them often anymore. Not at all with mortal canines. It's just the fey dogs, the magic ones, black dogs and hounds that set me off. Only when I am overcome with...
She bit her lip.
Fear,
Samuel suggested, and she didn't answer. She also had left off werewolves, I noticed.
I am glad to see that your magic has returned, he said. You thought it was gone.
She took a deep breath.
Yes, and for a while I was glad of it.
She looked at me.
And that has bearing on the present situation. You are Samuel's friend, Mercedes?
And mate of the local alpha werewolf, Jesse's father, I told her. I could hardly tell her that Samuel was single. That was a little too obvious. I saw that it mattered to her that Samuel didn't belong to me.
You were going to...
I was so caught up in matchmaking that I almost flubbed it then and there. I shut my mouth and grabbed Jessie's hand.
Help us find Gabriel.
Jessie completed my sentence for me. Ariana didn't move like a human at all when she came back to where we sat with her chair in hand. She moved like a wolf, bold and graceful and strong. Without a glance at Samuel, she sat down. Ask her about the thing the Fairy Queen wants, I told Jessie.
Z said she wants the Silver Bone, Ariana said. That is the object of power I built for my father, although it never quite worked as the one who commissioned it would have liked. For many years I thought I had destroyed all my magic by making it.
She closed her eyes and smiled.
I lived as a human, except for my long lifespan. I married, had children.
She glanced at Samuel, who was looking over our heads and out the window. His face was composed, but I could see the pulse beating fast in his throat. Ariana continued her story quickly.
It took me nearly a century to make the connection between my lack of magic and the Silver Bone.
She gave me a wry smile.
I know.
I had no magic anymore, and the last thing I made was something that was supposed to eat magic. You'd think I'd have made the connection, but all I knew was that it wasn't finished, and I couldn't remember how far I'd gotten when my father called the wolves. After a while, it was not as important to me. It was only a broken thing that did nothing. Someone stole it, and I thought, good riddance. I left it to them, and after a few months, my magic returned. It was then that I first understood I'd succeeded in part. It does consume fey magic, but mostly just the magic of the person who currently possesses it.
Why would a fairy queen want it then? I asked, then added a belated, Jessie?
It eats fey magic, Mercy, said Z. How easy to change a formidable opponent to someone more vulnerable than a human. At least a human knows he has no power. Dueling is still allowed among the fey.
Or maybe she doesn't really understand what it does, suggested Ariana. She could believe it does as it was built to do. Take power from one fey and give it to another. I've heard the stories, and I do not bother to correct them. Now I have answered a question. I have one for you. Mercy, did Finn give that book to you?
I took in a breath to answer, and Jessie clamped her hand over my mouth and jumped in.
It would work better if you ask me, she said. Then it would be less likely that Mercy breaks her word.
She dropped her hand.
Did Finn give you the book?
But what does a book have to do with it?
Glamour, said Samuel suddenly. By all that's holy, Harry, how did you manage to do that? You disguised the thing as a book and you gave it to your grandson?
He is mostly human, she answered him without looking his way. And I told him to keep it locked away so it wouldn't eat the magic he has.
What if he'd sold it? I asked. Jessie?
It is my blood that it was born in, Ariana said. It finds its way back to me eventually. Jessie, please ask her. Did Finn give you the book?
No. I might have bought it if I could have afforded— I stopped talking because she slumped down and put both hands over her face.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Ariana said, hiccuping and wiping her face with her hands.
Samuel surged toward her, then stopped where he was. She'd flinched just a little.
It's just been such a— I was so sure Finn was dead, that they'd killed him trying to get it and it would be my fault.
She wiped her eyes again.
I'm not usually like this, but Finn is. I adore Finn. He is so much like my son, who I lost a long time ago, and I thought he was dead.
Now you know he lives? Samuel asked.
In fire or in death?
Jessie said, understanding it before any of the rest of us did.
That's what the Fairy Queen said, that if she killed Mercy, or if they burned it, it would reveal itself. But if it still belongs to Finn... If they had killed him, the Silver Born would have revealed itself to them,
Ariana agreed.
They wouldn't still be looking for it.
Why did you make it that way? Asked Jessie.
Ariana smiled at her.
I didn't, but things of power evolve around the limits they are given. That's why, even though I thought it did nothing, I kept it with me, because even unfinished, it was a thing of power.
How did you figure out that...
Oh...
There was comprehension in Jessie's voice.
Right. It's a very old thing, and many of its owners have died in various ways. The fire thing came later.
Her face grew contemplative.
And quite spectacularly.
Aren't you its owner? Jessie asked.
Not if I want to keep my magic. I'm only its maker. That's why it's called the Silver Born.
Ariana means silver in Welsh.
Samuel sat down on the floor and leaned against the end of the nearest metal shelving unit. He'd had a rough couple of days, too, but I hoped that Ariana's obvious fear of him wouldn't send him sliding back into despair.
Jessie, I said, ask her how we find Gabriel. What did you bring me that belongs to this young man?
Jessie handed her a white plastic bag.
It's a sweater he loaned me when I was cold.
Finn told me that his magic was that he could sometimes feel things from objects, I said. Things like how old an object is, psychometry. Something he inherited from me.
Ariana pulled the sweater out and put it against her face.
Oh, dear. This won't work.
Why not? Samuel asked. It is his. I can smell his scent on it from here.
I don't work off scents, she told him, her eyes on the sweater. I work off ties, the threads that bind us to those things that are ours.
She looked at Jesse.
This sweater means far more to you as a gift of love than it did to him when he wore it. So I can use it to find you, but not him.
She hesitated.
Does he feel the same way about you?
Jesse blushed and shook her head.
I don't know.
Give me your hand, said the Fey woman. Jesse reached out, and Ariana held it, and smiled like a wolf scenting her prey.
Oh, yes, you are a lodestone.
She turned to look at Z.
With her, I can find him.
He is that way. She pointed toward the back of the garage. We loaded into Adam's truck because Z's truck wouldn't hold us all, and Z drove. Ariana sat in the front, and Samuel sat behind Z as far as he could get from her in the big truck. The sound of the big engine brought a smile to Z's face. He appreciates modern technology more than I do.
Adam has good taste, was all he said.
Looking for Gabriel was frustrating, because it took us a while to figure out that we had to cross the river, and the roads didn't always lead where she was pointing. Adam had a map in his jockey box, and Samuel used it to figure out how to work our way around to the most likely destinations. We ended up in an empty, flat meadow up a winding dirt road, not marked on Adam's map, that might have been an hour's drive from the Tri-Cities if we'd known where we were going in the first place. There was a fence around the field we'd all had to climb over. Maybe 10 years ago it might have held in livestock, but the barbed wire drooped and T-posts were tipped over. Near where we'd parked the car were the remnants of someone's old cabin. Ariana, looking out of place in her cardigan and stretch-knit pants, stopped in the middle of the field between a thatch of bunchgrass and a couple of sagebrush.
Here, she said, sounding worried.
Here? Jesse said incredulously. I took advantage of our halt to start picking cheatgrass out of my socks. If I'd realized we'd be running around out there, I'd have worn boots and a thicker jacket.
The Fairy Queen has set up her elfame,
Z observed soberly. That's bad? I asked.
Very bad, he said. It means she is stronger than I thought, and probably she has more fae at her command than we suspected if she still has the ability to build a home.
How could she have done that here? Asked Ariana. She must be able to tap into Underhill to create her own land. The gates to the secret place have been lost to us for centuries, and Underhill never was in this land.
I looked at Z. I couldn't help it, because I'd been to Underhill, and then sworn to silence.
Underhill was wherever it chose to be, Z said. The reservation is no more than 10 miles away as the crow flies. Most of the Fae who live there aren't the powerful among the Fae, but there are a lot of us, more than appear on the government's rolls. There is power in that kind of concentration.
He was careful not to say that the reservation had reopened a path or two to Underhill. Ariana held her hand out, palm down, and closed her eyes briefly.
You're right, Z. There is power here that tastes of the old place. I had wondered why she bothered to keep Finn alive when killing him would have been the most logical path for her to take. She outsmarted herself when she took him to Elfame.
Fairy queens follow rules, agreed Z. Mortals who are taken to the Elfame cannot be killed or permanently harmed. It's part of the magic of building a place apart.
Ariana gave him a little smile.
My Finn must be too human for her to kill. I wonder if she knew that when she took him to her lair. If he is human, she cannot of her own volition release him for a year and a day.
Does that mean she can't kill Gabriel?
Jessie rubbed her arms to keep warm.
And that we can't get him for a year and a day either?
She can't kill Gabriel either.
It was Samuel who answered.
That doesn't mean she won't hurt or enthrall them. Fairy prisoners can be rescued by stealth, by battle, or by bargaining.
Bargaining? Like in the song The Devil Went Down to Georgia, but with a fairy? I asked. It seemed to me that I'd heard a similar tale with fairies in it.
Right, Samuel agreed. It can be a contest, usually musical, because fairy queens tend to be musically talented.
but there are stories of foot races or swimming contests. My father has a wonderful old song about a young man who challenged a fairy to an eating contest and won.
How do we get in? Asked Jessie.
The only way I know of getting into Elfheim is by following the queen in, Ariana said.
I might be able to open a way, said Z. I think I can manage to keep her from knowing what I've done, but I'll have to stay here and hold the door open, and I won't be able to keep it open forever. An hour at most, and you have to be out. If the door closes, as it does in Underhill, time passes differently in Elfheim. If the door closes, even if you manage to escape, there's no telling how much time will have passed when you get out.
Okay, said Jessie.
Oh no, I said. Not you, Jess, no.
I'll be the safest person there, she told me. I'm strictly a mortal human. They can't kill me.
They can make you want to be dead, said Samuel.
You need me to find Gabriel, Jessie set her chin. I'm coming.
I looked at Ariana, who nodded.
The Elfheim is entirely under the control of its maker. If we want to find your young man quickly and get him out, we'll need her to do it.
Then let me call Adam and get the wolves. I should have stopped at Sylvia's to pick up something that Ariana could have found Gabriel with that wasn't living. I didn't want to cause Adam's pack any more trouble than I already had, but I wanted even more to get Gabriel and Finn out of the fairy's hold and still keep Jessie safe. Ariana sucked in a quick breath.
I am sorry, she said. Samuel is... I could not do it with strange werewolves. If it were just fear, I would do it, but the panic attacks can be dangerous to anyone around me.
She looked at Z.
Could they find them without me, do you think?
No, said Z. If I have to stay out here, then they will need you to keep them from being lost. Moreover, I think that the wolves might be a mistake. Samuel is old enough and powerful in his own right. I think he could resist the will of one such as a fairy queen. But all of the wolves, the chances are too great that she would turn our own against us. If she turns you or Jessie, Ariana and Sam can still get you out. If you go in with the pack, even one wolf who turns would mean death.
It's all right, Mercy, said Jessie. I'm not helpless, and I... Would you be able to wait out here if it were Dad in there?
No.
Are you ready?
Asked Z. All right, I said, painfully aware that Adam would not be happy with me, but Jessie was right. She was probably the safest among us. Let's get him out of here.
Good, said Z,
and he dropped his glamour without fanfare or drama. One moment he was the tallish, skinny old man with a little rounded belly and age spots on his neck and hands, and the next he was a tall, sleek warrior with skin dark as wet bark. Sunlight tinted his hair gold. It hung in a thick braid that flowed over one shoulder and hung lower than his belt. The last time I'd seen him, his pointed ears had been pierced many times, and he had worn bone earrings in the piercings. There were no decorations at all. His was a body that didn't belong in the jeans and plaid flannel shirt he still wore. The clothing fit him as well in his current shape as they had in the one I was used to. I suppose that made sense, because it was the Z I knew who was the illusion, and this man and his clothes that were real. Z's true face was uncanny, beautiful, proud, and cruel. I remembered the stories I'd found about the dark smith of Drontheim. Z had never been the kind of fairy who cleaned houses or rescued lost children. He'd been one to avoid if you could, and to treat very, very courteously if you couldn't. He'd mellowed a little with age, and didn't disembowel anyone who displeased him anymore. Not that I'd seen, anyway.
Wow, said Jessie. You are beautiful. Scary, but beautiful.
He looked at her a moment, then said,
I have heard Gabriel say the same of you, Jessie Adamsdochter. It was meant as a compliment, I believe.
He turned to Ariana.
You'll have to leave the glamour behind. The only glamour that works in Elfheim is the Queen's, and if you wait until the Elfheim rips it from you, it will alert those inside that they have an intruder.
She clenched her fists and glanced at Samuel and away.
I've seen your scars, he said. I am a doctor and a werewolf. I saw those wounds when they were new and raw. Scars do not bother me. They are the laurels of the survivor.
Like Z, she didn't bother with theatrics. Without glamour, her skin was a warmer color than Z's and several shades lighter. It was beautiful against silver lavender hair that was no more than a finger length long anywhere and floated out from her scalp more like plumage than hair, a lot like Jessie's current hairstyle. Ariana's clothes altered when her glamour dropped as well, into a simple knee-length dress of an off-white color with a handkerchief hem. She wasn't conventionally beautiful. Her face was too inhuman for that, with eyes that were too big and a nose too small for humanity. Her scars weren't as bad as they'd appeared when I'd seen them before. They looked older and less angry, but there were a lot of them.
"We are ready," Samuel said, looking at Ariana with a hunger that had nothing to do with his stomach.
Z reached behind his head and drew his dagger, dark-bladed and elegant in its deadly simplicity, from beneath the collar of his shirt. Either it was magic or a sheath, I couldn't tell, and with Z, it could be either one. He used it to make a single clean cut on his forearm. For a moment, nothing happened, and then blood, dark and red, welled up. He knelt and let the blood drip into the dirt.
"Mother," he said, "hear me, your child."
He put the hand of his uninjured arm into the soil and mixed his blood into the powdery earth. In German, he whispered,
"Erde, geliebte Mutter, dein Kind ruft, schmecke mein Blut, erkenne deine Schöpfung, gewähre Einlass."
Magic made my feet tingle and my nose itch, but nothing else happened. Z stood up and counted off 4 paces before he sliced his other forearm. Kneeling, he bowed his head, and this time there was power in his voice.
"Erde mein, lass mich ein."
Blood slid over his skin and down onto the backs of his hands, which were flat on the ground.
"Gibst mir Mut,"
he shouted, and rolled his hands over, wiping the blood on the ground.
"Trinkst mein Blut, erkenne mich."
He leaned forward and put his weight on his arms. First his hands, then his arms, sank into the ground until they were buried past the wounds he'd given himself. He leaned down until his mouth was nearly in the dirt and said quietly,
"Öffne dich."
The ground under my feet vibrated, and a crack appeared between the place Z sat and the place where he'd mixed his blood with the soil.
"Erde mein," he said.
The ground quivered with the vibrations of his voice, which sounded darker, as if he were dragging it out of a deep cavern.
"Lass mich ein, gibst mir Glut."
He put his forehead on the ground.
"Trinke mein Blut, es quillt für dich hervor, öffne mir ein Tor."
There was a flash, and a large square of dirt just disappeared, leaving in its place a stone staircase that went straight down for 8 steps, then began to turn upon its inner edge. I couldn't see any farther because a thick fog rose from the depths of the hole and obscured the stairway about 10 feet down. Z jerked his hands out of the ground. There was dirt on his arms, but no wounds and no blood. He raised one hand and held it out to Ariana, giving her a stone that glowed.
"I can hold it for about an hour," Z told us. "Ariana can use the stone to find the way back to me. If you see the light begin to flicker, it means I am at the end of my strength, and you need to get back here. So long as this door is open, the time in the Elfheim will sync with the time outside. If this door closes, you might get out. But I don't know when you'll find yourselves, if you do."
Samuel led the way down, followed by Ariana. I sent Jessie ahead of me and took up the rear. The light above us grew quickly dimmer until we were traveling in virtual darkness. Jessie stumbled, and I caught her before she could fall.
"Here," said Ariana. "Put your hand on my shoulder, Jessie."
"I'll put mine on yours," I told Jessie. "Samuel, can you see anything?"
"I can now," he said. "It's getting lighter ahead."
Lighter was a relative term, but the 10 stairs we went down I could see. The stairs ended in a dirt tunnel that was lit by gems embedded in the ground that were as big around as oranges. The ceiling of the tunnel was about 6 inches lower than Samuel was tall, and the roof and sides were thick with tree roots. "There aren't any trees above us," I said. "And even if there were, we've come down a long way past where I'd have thought there would be roots." She has a forest lord in her court, said Ariana, reaching to the side, where strings of roots made a rough curtain for the dirt wall beyond. The roots moved toward her, caressing her fingers briefly before falling back where they had been.
What kind of fae are you, Ariana? Asked Jesse. Are you a forest lord too, or a gremlin like Zee because you can work silver?
There are no others like Zee, she told us. He is unique. Almost all fae can work with silver to one extent or another. Silver loves fae magic. But you are right. There are iron-kissed fae in my background, and steel holds no terrors for me. We were talking quietly, but I wasn't too worried about being discovered. There was a feeling of emptiness here that told me that there was no life other than the roots that tangled in my hair and tripped my feet. I stopped, remembering that I wasn't supposed to discuss anything about the Fairy Queen. Had I already broken my word? Did it matter when we were storming the castle? Jesse, I said, deciding to play it safe, we haven't planned anything at all about the rescue.
There's no planning when you're running through Elfame, said Samuel, who was walking bent over, with one hand up to ward off the roots. It's not that kind of place. Ariana will lead us to her grandson in Gabriel, and we'll try to get out by coping with anything that happens along the way.
That sounds simple, I said.
It could be simple, Ariana told me. She cannot be expecting visitors. There just aren't very many fae who could open a back entrance into a fairy queen's lair. Thralls will not react to us. They know nothing, and are not much more than automata who follow the queen's orders. We may be able to find Finn and Gabriel and leave with them before anyone realizes there is something wrong. Should we have brought... Ariana's fingers touched my lips.
Best we not talk about what that one so desires in her lair, she told me. I expect she might hear that. And no, it is powerful. And even if it will not do as she wants, it will still do great harm in the wrong hands.
All right, I said.
Samuel raised his head.
Best we not talk any more at all. I'm starting to pick up the scent of people now.
I could smell them too once he pointed it out. We were coming upon more traveled ways. The loose dirt of the floor became packed earth, and the roots thinned and were replaced with rough-cut square blocks as the dirt floor became cobbles and the ceiling rose so Samuel could stand up straight again. There were already other tunnels joining ours. I caught the scent before Samuel, but I think it was only because the woman came upon us from behind and I was walking last. It didn't matter, though, because I only had time to whirl around and she was upon us. She wore a torn jacket and filthy jeans and carried a large wooden cutting board in both her hands. She walked right into me and bounced off. When she tried to walk around me, I blocked her a second time. Take this to the kitchen, she said without looking up at me. She shifted her weight from one foot to the other, all of her attention on the board she held. Her hair hung in ragged clumps, and there was dirt on her knuckles. Around her neck was a thin silver collar.
The kitchen, child, the kitchen. Take this to the kitchen.
I moved out of her way, and she all but sprinted past us.
She's not taking care of her thralls, said Ariana disapprovingly.
Thrall? Asked Jesse. Slave, I answered. You know when someone is enthralled with a movie or a boyfriend? That's from the same root word.
Follow her, said Ariana. The kitchen should be at the heart of Elfame.
We jogged after her, passing by a young man in a police uniform, a woman in a jogging suit, and an older woman carrying a steaming teapot, all wearing silver collars, and all moving with unnatural intentness. The floor switched from cobbles to stone tiles, and the ceiling rose again until it was 15 feet or more above our heads. The gems that had lit the passage we had been in were lining the walls and dangling from the ceiling from something that could equally well have been fine silver wire or spider webs. Whatever it was, it didn't look strong enough to hold them. Samuel's head would hit the lower gemstones once in a while, sending them swinging. We came into the kitchen, which could have been imported from a 1950s TV set. A very large cooking set, since there were 2 6-burner stoves in a room that was bigger than my now-deceased trailer. I looked around,
but none of the people in the kitchen was Donna Reed or June Cleaver, or Gabriel Sandoval either. The glistening white appliances were rounded in a manner my eyes found odd, and the three refrigerators had silver latching handles and Frigidaire stenciled in silver across the top. People with silver collars were preparing food and drink, and didn't seem to notice our presence at all. The woman we'd followed here put the cutting board on the counter next to one of the sinks, and began to fill the sink with water by working the hand pump that it had instead of a faucet.
"Excuse me," said Ariana, walking up to a man who was stirring something in a pot that looked like oatmeal.
"Stir the pot 70 times 7, he said.
"Where are they keeping the prisoners?" Samuel asked, putting the push into his voice that the really dominant wolves could.
His voice echoed oddly in the room. Slowly, all the action in the kitchen came to a stop. One by one, the 6 people wearing silver circlets around their throats turned to look at Samuel. The man Ariana had spoken to stopped moving last. He pulled his spoon out of the pot and pointed to one of the 7 rounded doorways. The others, one by one, pointed the same way.
47 steps, the oatmeal stirrer said.
Take the right tunnel, said a man who'd been chopping turnips.
18 steps and turn, said a girl kneading bread. The key is on the hook. The door is yellow.
Do not let them out,
said a boy who looked about 13 and had been filling glasses with water from a pitcher.
Resume your tasks, said Samuel.
And one at a time, they did so.
I think that's the creepiest thing I've ever seen, said Jesse. Are we just going to leave these people here?
We're going to get Gabriel out, and Finn, said Ariana. And then we'll take this to the Grey Lords, who have forbidden the keeping of thralls. Only the Fairy Queen can release her thralls, and the Grey Lords are the only ones who have a chance of making her do that. In the Elfheim, she rules utterly.
What if she's enthralled Gabriel?
She won't have, said Ariana positively. She promised mercy, and breaking her promise would have dire consequences, and my Finn is protected against such a thing. The path we took from the kitchen was less grand than the one we'd taken into it. The floor was made of those small white octagonal tiles, with a line of black tiles running about a foot from either wall. 47 paces from the kitchen, the tunnel widened into a small room. The black tiles formed a complicated Celtic knot in the center of the room. There were passageways that opened across from ours, and one to either side. We took the one to the right. Here the floor was rough wooden planks that showed the marks of being hand-hewn. It creaked a little under Samuel, who was the heaviest of us.
18, he said,
and there was a yellow door with an old-fashioned key hanging off a hook, the first door we'd seen in the Elfheim. Samuel took the key from the lock and opened the door.
Doc, said Gabriel, what are you doing here?
Gabriel!
Jesse pushed past Samuel. Key in hand, Samuel followed her in. Ariana and I brought up the rear. Gabriel was hugging Jesse.
What are all of you doing here? Did she get you too?
The room was white. White stone walls, white ceiling with clear crystals hanging down to light the room. The floors were made of a single slab of polished white marble. There were 2 beds with white bedding. The only color in the room came from Gabriel and the man who was lying on one of the beds. He looked dreadful, and I'd never have recognized him if Ariana hadn't whispered his name. Finn sat up slowly, as if his ribs hurt, and Ariana rushed to kneel beside his bed on one knee. He frowned at her.
Who?
Grandma Alicia, she said. He looked startled, then he smiled.
Has anyone ever told you that you don't look like anyone's grandmother? Is it a rescue, then? Like in the old stories?
No, said Samuel, who had turned to face the doorway.
It's a trap.
Welcome to my home, said a familiar dark voice. I'm so happy you came to call.
The woman who stood in the doorway of the cell was lovely. Her hair was dark smoke, pulled back in a complicated braid composed of many small plaits. It flowed down her back and dragged the ground like an Arabian show horse's tail and set off the porcelain of her skin and the rose of her lips.
She was looking at me.
I am so glad to have you in my home, Mercedes Thompson. I was just trying to call you on my cell when, imagine my surprise, I discovered that you were here. But you did not bring it.
Having a fairy queen talking about cell phones almost was enough to make me laugh. Almost. I raised my chin. By stealth, by strength, by bargain. I am not such a poor bargainer, fairy queen. If I had brought it, we could not play. She smiled, and her silver-gray eyes warmed.
By all means, she said. Let us play.
Chapter 14.
But this is not the proper place for bargaining, she said. Follow me.
Ariana picked up Finn in her arms. Samuel looked at Gabriel.
I'm okay, Doc, he said.
He glanced at Ariana, then looked at me.
Werewolf,
he mouthed.
No, said Samuel. That's me. Ariana is Fae.
Gabriel jerked his head to Samuel.
You're...
And then his face cleared.
That explains a few things. Snowball?
Samuel smiled.
Are you sure you don't need help? Finn's the one who was really hurt, he said. He's gotten a lot better over the past week, but he didn't start off good.
I gave Gabriel a sharp look, but I supposed it wasn't really important to tell him that he'd only been gone a day out in the real world. If we didn't get out before Z had to stop holding the door open, then it really wouldn't matter. The fairy queen's voice floated through the doorway.
Are you coming?
Ariana nodded to Samuel, who took point again out the door, following the fairy queen. Ariana went next, and I waved my hand for Gabriel and Jesse to precede me. I took a deep breath, the kind that cleared your mind and lungs before some extreme endeavor, and smelled earth and growing things in this cold marble room. Only the fairy queen's glamour would work in her elfame, Z had said. I paid attention to my nose as we walked down the hall in the wake of the fairy queen. Question, I thought as I tried to sniff out the scents that were real from the ones produced by the queen's illusions. If it looks like a hallway, feels like a hallway, and acts like a hallway, is it important to figure out that it isn't a hallway? The curiosity is very nearly my besetting sin. Gradually, as we walked, the scent of dirt, of the sap of wounded wood, and of something that might have been sorrow, grew. I glanced up at the dangling lights and saw tree roots instead of silver wires, and shining rocks instead of gemstones, rocks much like the one Z had given Ariana. I blinked, and the gems were back, but I didn't believe in them anymore, and they wavered. I stumbled and looked down, momentarily seeing a root sticking up from a soft dirt floor. Then my vision changed, and the tiny white tiles, laid flat and even with nothing to trip over, were back.
Mercy? Jesse asked. Are you all right?
The queen looked back at me, and her face, though still beautiful, was different from the woman she'd been just a few minutes ago. It was elongated from chin to forehead, and her eyelashes were longer than humanly possible without glue and fake eyelashes. Narrow, clear wings like a damselfly's poked up from her shoulders. They were too small to lift her body off the ground without magic. Fine, I said. The long silver gown the queen had been wearing was real enough, but there were dark brown stains that might have been old blood on the hem and near her wrists. The necklace she wore, which had looked like a silver and diamond waterfall, was of tarnished black metal, and the set stones were uncut. My first sight of the great hall she led us to was jaw-dropping, if only for ostentatiousness. The floors were white marble shot with gray and silver, and pillars of green jade rose gracefully to support an arching ceiling that would not have looked out of place at the Notre Dame Cathedral. Silver trees with jade leaves grew out of the marble floor and shivered, disturbed by a wind I could not feel. When the leaves knocked together, they chimed musically. Graceful benches carved out of pale and dark woods, like a wooden chess set, were placed artfully around the room, occupied by lovely women and beautiful men who all looked at us when we entered the room. At the far side of the hall, there was a raised dais with a silver throne, delicately made and decorated with gems of green and red, each as big as my hand. Curled up next to the chair was a cat that looked like a small cheetah until it lifted its head, displaying huge ears. Serval, I thought, or something that looked a lot like the medium-sized African hunting cat. But I didn't smell a cat. The whole room smelled of rotting wood and dying things. And then the room I was walking through wasn't a room at all. I didn't think there were any naturally occurring caves in this area. There are a few man-made caves because some of the wineries have carved their own caverns into the basalt to age their wines. Most of our geology is igneous, which allows for lava tubes, but no limestone caves like the ones in Carlsbad. I suppose magic, if it is strong enough, doesn't care much about geology, because we were in a huge cave whose walls, ceiling, and floor were not stone, but earth and roots. The Elfame was magic-made, but I wondered if it was the Fairy Queen's magic that had created it. Ariana had looked at the tree roots in the cave Z's entrance had brought us to, and she said that there must be a forest lord about. Looking around, I thought she was right. The floor was woven from tree roots. I had to look sharp not to trip and draw attention to myself again. The Fairy Queen's throne was the only thing in the whole room that had not altered when I saw through the glamour. The pillars were thick roots hanging from the ceiling or bursting from the floor like living stalactites and stalagmites. The benches were formed of living wood, not so pretty as the Queen's illusions, but more beautiful. Most of the Fae in the room were not pretty, though there were a few, as long as your tastes weren't hung up on humanity as a standard for beauty. None of them looked like lords and ladies. Ariana and the Fairy Queen herself were the most human-appearing among them, and neither would have been able to walk into a store without everyone knowing that she was other. I didn't waste much time looking at the court fae, though. It was the creature that lay behind the Fairy Queen's throne that caught my attention. It lay huge and still, like a great redwood cut down by the woodsman's axe. It had bark and evergreen needles, but it also had four eyes as big as dinner plates that glowed like ruby glass lanterns. It was bound with iron chains that glittered with magic. I didn't know what a forest lord looked like, but a giant tree with eyes seemed like a strong possibility. Next to the throne was a middle-aged woman who had the strong features and coloring of the Mediterranean people, Greek or Italian or possibly even Turkish. She wore the collar I'd begun to associate with the Fairy Queen's thralls, but she was also chained to the throne. My nose told me that somewhere among the Fae, the humans, and the dying forest lord, there was a witch. I could see a witch being tough enough that the Fairy Queen would want more than just a silver ring around her throat to ensure she was controlled. Among those who call themselves witches, there are various types. Least troublesome are the humans who have adopted Wicca as their religion. Some of them have a spark of power, enough to enrich their faith, but not so much to attract the attention of bigger and nastier things. Then there are the white witches, people born to the witch families who have chosen to do no harm. Like the mundane-born witches, white witches are usually not very powerful, because witch magic gets its power from death, pain, and sacrifice, and white witches have chosen to eschew that. Most witches of any power are black witches. They smell of it. Some more than others. There are black witches who skirt the doing of actual evil. Elizaveta Arkadyevna, our Pax witch, is one of those. She is very powerful as witches, even as black witches go. But, as I understand it, skirting evil is difficult, time-consuming, and requires a lot more from a practitioner than true black magic does. It is so much easier to use the suffering of others to make magic, and the results are more predictable. This witch, and as we closed toward the throne the smell got stronger and stronger, making my supposition more and more likely, this witch stank of the blackest magic. In her neighborhood, pets and small children would go missing, and even the occasional homeless man. I was betting that the iron chains binding the forest lord were hers. The room the others saw, for all its height, was not a terribly big one. The cave I could see was bigger, but almost half of it was taken up by the forest lord behind the throne. It didn't take long for us to reach the dais. The fairy queen sat on the edge of the seat of the silver throne and reached down to pet her witch, who didn't seem to appreciate it much. The queen's wings fluttered as she sat, then folded so she could lean against the back of the throne. Her eyelids fluttered with a faint rip-rip sound. Once I was